5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room Radio Show, brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing. Experienced publishers of horror, noir, bizarro, and all things dark in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. You can find us at www.hellboundbooks.com. But first, get your feet up and enjoy the show.
So 300, I'm going to have to stop saying the numbers. They're getting meaningless now. 326. We've been doing this how many years now? I think I was 12 when we started this show, and I'm close to retirement. But it is 9:30 Central. And other times in other places. So that's how it works. I'm still not used to the whole time zone thing, because in England we have one, and that's proper. They should just have, everybody should have one time zone for me. Make life a lot easier. But by the by, and I think she's, no, she's actually in a different time zone to me, but we'll bring her on anyway. How you do it? It's been a week. It's been a week. Oh my goodness,
Thursday,
mate. How's yours been? Oh, happy anniversary, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, so today is my Friday, thank goodness. And I'm it's been a day. It's been a week actually, and I hate that we actually say that every single week. We're like, man, it just flew by, and they're getting faster and faster, and as soon as we hit the button to like stop the show, we're going to just start it right back up again. Just that fast now. So we just
Yeah, you're right. It's just, suddenly it's Thursday and obviously today is my first day because I've got a whole other day tomorrow and I'll be doing, I've actually started scheduling a bit of work. I need to, because my daughter's been on vacation this summer, this new fall vacation, the full week they get off, so we spent some time with her, which is kind of cool. But so I've got some catching up to do. Of course, you know, with Hellbound, it's obviously a busy time of year because we've got a whole bunch of books coming out that have just come out and that are due out between now and the objective is to get them all out by the end of November, so they're all good for the
Christmas.
We've got some terrific anthologies coming up and some books. I think we still do books, I presume.
I know.
A spokesman for Hellbound Books said yesterday. Yeah, you know, so we got all that going. Plus, at the same time, it's never ending. We never get that point where we think, oh, you know, have a breather, because obviously at the same time as formatting and getting new books published and fighting with Amazon, and if Jeff Bezos is listening, Jeff, you're a bald-headed twat. Sort your fucking company out, bucko. I've been having fun games with Amazon, and luckily I managed to find a workaround, but they've been about, you know, as helpful as an unhelpful person on Unhelpful People Day. but obviously
I'm
doing it all, and also planning into next year. You know, I've already looking at signing some terrific new novels for next year. Looking at next year's batch of anthologies. So it is. And then, funnily enough, we'll blink, And we'll be sat here this time next year saying, well, look what's coming for 2025.
That's a scary thought, but it's true. This year went by crazy, just crazy fast. I can't believe we're into October already. It's just, oh my goodness, I actually took a picture, I think it was yesterday, at the grocery store. Eggnog has already hit the shelves.
Oh, it'll have gone off by Christmas. It doesn't, I made the mistake. I did that last year. I thought, I'll get some eggnog in while it's in. And it comes to like, you know, just before Christmas, I'll break my eggnog. And it was just rancid.
It's gone bad, yeah.
Oh, it was awful.
It doesn't last that long here. Me and Sean really, really like it, so it doesn't last. But I was excited. I mean, I didn't buy any because it's, you know, still October only, but I was super excited because from now until the end of the year, it is my happy time. I am,
you're one of these freaky people who actually enjoys Christmas.
Oh, I can't wait. And well, but it's this whole, you know, getting colder and decorations and like the whole house is just, you know, Halloween everywhere. And the husband was looking around. We were at Michael's 2 days ago and I was like, oh my God, I wanted these skeletons. And he was like, don't you have enough skeletons? And then when we got home, he proceeded
no.
to count. Yeah, he proceeded to count the skeletons. And, you know, some of the ones he was counting, I'm like, those are a pair. They're together. You count them as one, not two. And you know, needless to say, we compromised, and I did not get my skeletons because we do have a lot of skeletons.
Well,
but it's
can you ever have enough skeletons, really?
Thank you. I do not think you can. No.
Clearly not.
I love them.
So, yeah, and again, it's coming up. We've got, fun enough, we've got on the, here in Houston, actually, we've got the, the official launch of Road Texas. I've got to get this right, actually. Roadkill, Texas, what is it? Texas Horror by Texas Writers, Volume 8. And yours truly, I'm going to be there. Obviously, star of the show. We'll go with the great independent bookstore, Brazos Books, here in
Yay.
Houston. And E.R. Bills is going to be there. I think Patrick Harrison, I think. Madison Estes, a couple of other contributing authors. Because not only are we the publisher, I have a story in there as well.
Yeah.
Obviously,
yes.
The whole thing is headlined by, he won't be there, but obviously his story's in the book, the one and only Joe Lansdale, big, big fan.
Oh, nice.
Terrific guy, actually. It's a shame he can't make it, but he can spin a yarn or two, can Joe. So that's on the 28th, that's the Saturday before Halloween, so that'll be jolly. That'll be a trip out for me. I don't get out much, to be honest. Well, I'm either working or I'm too tired because I've been working, you know. Plus,
yes,
as well, nobody wants to go out with me. Nobody.
I don't think that's true.
I think the problem, I've tried this whole, you know, dating and relationship thing. The problem is I just can't be bothered to put the effort in. I think that's my big failing. They expect some effort, you know? And it's
a little bit.
That's one of the benefits of being married is you don't have to try. You know, you don't have to put any effort in. So,
I don't know if that's totally true.
Not that I'm going to get married again, ever. I'm obviously very, very bad at it, but... Yeah, but I just can't be bothered, to be honest. And it's somewhat telling when, you know, I'm on a date with the lady. This is no reflection on the lady at all. And about halfway through, I'm thinking I could be sat on my couch in my comfies, the beer in my hand, cuddling the dog, watching something on the, you're watching TV, watching a movie,
watching
my show, whatever. And that's not a good place to be
right
halfway
well,
through
you know
a day
maybe,
you know
maybe it is you know, maybe there's it is something with the lady. Maybe that's just not the right one for you there. You know, maybe there is one out there.
Yeah,
that,
but you know, I'm at that age, Xena, where I can't afford to be too picky now. You know, you know, I obviously Britney Spears is getting divorced, so you know, I'm kind of holding out for Britney, but she'll call.
Yeah, be careful on the
kitchen. She'll call. She's yeah, just hide all the knives. Yeah.
She'll call.
Brittany will call. But if she leaves it much longer, it'll be look. No, you've had your chance, Brittany. I'm sorry. No. Just you've left it too long. You know. To be honest, she's no spring chicken anymore. You know. She's pushing. She's 40. I mean, just, you know, she's got a little bit. Bit long in the tooth there, you know, but so you know, she may have missed a chance with me. Let's put it that way. Missed a chance.
You mentioned sitting on the couch watching TV, and I think it was last week we binge watched the show that's on. I think it's on Netflix called Frogging. And
is that good?
Well, my husband was having like a panic attack while watching it. So, people who are like pretty much squatting in your house and you don't know.
But you don't know they're there. They're hiding.
Yeah.
I know.
He was totally, you know, freaking out over this. And he is, you know, saying to, you know, my son, it's on Hulu. He's like, this is why I harp on the doors being locked. And, you know, he's going on.
Well, funnily enough, the other day, my daughter was at school and I could feel it was warm upstairs. I went upstairs I have to go and when we start running out of bowls and forks and spoons, I have to go and do a round of the kids' rooms because they're all there.
Right.
So I was upstairs and I thought, it's not that warm because obviously this is Houston, you know, even though it's October, it was warm upstairs. Why is it warm? Where's the heat coming from? And one of the front bedrooms that we use, like a game room. My daughter uses a game room. We have a balcony, and it's got a door that was the balcony of the veranda, we call it. And she's left this fucking door open, so it's wide open. So I thought, well, did she leave it open, or somebody opened it, or somebody come in? So literally, like you say, because there was a movie, there's a horror movie that dealt with. I can't remember what it's called. That film, very very good film actually. That was the premise, you know, the people were just living in the space in the house. Now. So literally, I had to go and get my gun. And I looked under all the beds, checked the attic, checked all the closets, every little hidey hole where somebody could be hiding. and then gave her a bit of a stern talking to when she got home about keeping the fucking doors locked, because somebody could easily, they could climb up, they could get in, and we wouldn't know, you know. So I'm not going to watch that because I'm paranoid enough as
you
it is.
You should. See, that's, you know, and I'm not, but the husband is, and we watched it, and it made his blood pressure go up, I think.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, because, you know, just like, you know, you were like, well, I went and got my gun so many times during, you know, watching the show, my husband would be shouting, where's your gun?
yeah.
At the TV, and it's pretty funny.
Yeah, does he realize, I know he's getting on a bit, but does he not realize they can't hear him?
You know, he was actually yelling at the TV, so there were times I was unsure. You know, he is a whole 2 years older than me, so he's, you know.
Well, speaking of weird people, here's the thing. Me and my daughter were driving today in the car. We had the wind, a nice day, because it's still warm, but it's cool if we have the windows down, music up, and we're driving along, and we're at an intersection, the lights were out. They've been out for like 3 days. I mean, how long does it take to fix some bloody traffic lights, really? Come on. Anyway, so
right.
they were kind of fixed yesterday, but now they're broken again. But anyway, so we get to the intersection, and we kind of stop, get ready to go, and this stupid woman, had come into the intersection, and I got golden rule is you don't come to an intersection unless you can leave it, so she blocked it. I was going, and she just pulled straight in front of me, just stopped, and she's looking at me like it's my fault. And I just shouted, you're in the way. And she threw a sandwich at me. No, where did I? She sat there stuffing her fat face in a car, paying more attention to her Arby's sandwich than me and what's going on around her. And literally, she threw her sandwich out of the car window at my car. And that is the first time in decades of motoring that anybody's ever thrown a sandwich at me. So it's a first. It's a first. So if she's listening in, A, you missed. And B, I wonder how long it was before she drove off thinking, I wish I hadn't thrown my sandwich out the window now. I'm hungry.
Right,
you know,
right,
because
you know,
what a stupid thing to do. I mean, it's like, what?
We have to strive for that now. Like, we've gotten the finger and people yelling, but never have we gotten a sandwich. So
there you go. It's a first for everyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Bless. Anyway, we digress, as always.
Yeah.
What have we got on the show this evening, Christina, me old duck?
I'm going to just introduce our first guest. We have to get him on because we sat here talking for all this time. Yeah. So
By we, you mean me. Oh, Longmore's been going on a bit again. He's been well, you see, this is my social life. I do not get out much. This is my social life. This is it. So I have to make the most of it.
I am very excited tonight. Our first guest of the evening, we have professional writer and editor for over 30 years, Stone Wallace. Woo!
Hello!
Hello there. It's very nice to meet you both, finally.
Finally, nice to actually get to talk to you, Stone. How are you this evening?
I'm doing quite well, actually, listening to you both talk about the change in weather. We're moving into the cold season, especially up here in Canada, where we are often known as winter pig. Fortunately, we're still not doing too bad, but another month or so, and we should start to feel the horror of winter, let's say.
Well, you say same here in Houston. You know, it's going to plummet down to the sort of mid-80s. and obviously I'll be getting my hat and coat on and maybe an extra, you know, an extra vest or something.
We'll be putting on parkas. So, and then we're going to bring out the snow shovels and do the heavy shoveling for driveways and
such.
Goodness. So yeah, it's not a season I look forward to. When I was younger, speaking of which, by the way, there is a mistake you made and I regret have to admit it, but it's not 30 years, it's 40 years.
Whoa.
Oh,
awesome.
Well, congratulations.
Well, I sold my first book back in 1984, so I think we're moving. And I was writing prior to that, of course, you know, with some early work that didn't make the grade, but my first book was published in 84. So, yeah,
wow.
Time marches on, that's for sure.
Yes, it does. And it, as we said earlier, it marches on quicker each year as well, which is a worry.
Yes, it certainly does. I mean, I can't believe it's already the end of summer, moving into the winter season. And, I still say what happened to summer, which we didn't really have much of this year. It was incredibly hot and humid, which is another condition I really can barely tolerate. And so you never can find quite that good temperature you like to enjoy.
That is
true.
I mean, we have it, as I said, I mean, back in June. Obviously, each bit, I mean, summer here has been consistently in the hundreds. And we had four-day power out in June, so no AC for
four days.
And it was miserable. I've now bought a generator, so I'm not going to go through that again. I'm not going to
have our air conditioner broke down, so we had to pretty much suffer through the humidity.
Well, the year before, my AC, my condenser broke. And it broke at like 4:30 on a Friday, and I managed to get somebody out, and they had to replace the condenser because he said, you know, we could go through warranty. It was like 7 years old or whatever, but by the time, you know, it could take a week or two, and he put a new one in, and it was only out. So he came back on at 9:30 at night, and the kids were moaning. like. So imagine 4 days. So, oh, dear me. Never again.
It's tough, I know, definitely. I spent 8 months in Las Vegas actually working on a book, and it was amazing because the temperatures get so high there, yet you can still function because it's a dry heat. Whereas here we get the humidity, and once it hits those temperatures, you just want to lie down and forget about everything.
Oh, absolutely. It drains you. I mean, you just couldn't even function. Couldn't even think. It was just awful. I just sort of sat on the couch.
I know what that's like, absolutely.
Catatonic, pretty much. Although, to be fair, I did manage to read the new Thomas Harris, the latest Thomas. I bought it. I did buy it new, but I think it's been on my shelf for 2 years. I just haven't had time to read it. I read the new Thomas Harris and something else, and so I managed to read a little bit, but no, I was just not, no. It just, like you say, it just drains you. It's awful. So
it drains you, absolutely. All the energy just goes, just, you know, it's like the blob absorbing all your energy.
Yeah, exactly,
sing the praises of Tennessee here real quick and just say that the reason I live in Tennessee is because I think they have perfect temperatures. We don't get too hot in the summer and we don't get too cold in the winter, and it's perfect. So,
I envy you. Maybe that's where I'll think about coming to retire.
Yes, it's beautiful. We do get a little tiny bit of snow in the winter, but not much at all. And it's perfect. And I think this summer, I don't think we even got, I think we possibly did like low 90s maybe a few times, but it wasn't bad at all. So
low 90s. Seriously, yeah. Low 90s is genuinely is hat and coat weather here. It's funny, you know, we say that the temperature drops, it just means, you know, you put a slightly thicker t-shirt on, you know, with your shorts. But having come from England, which is pretty damp and dreary a lot of the time, you know, I like the warmth, you know, it's nice, but it's everywhere's air conditioned when it works. So it took me a few years to get used to it, but I'm used to it now, and I like it's good for my old bones. It's good for the old bones, that's what I say.
Stone, you're here to talk to us tonight about your book. It comes out tomorrow, I think, doesn't it?
Officially out tomorrow. But from hell, you know, you're supposed to name check us, Christina. You know, it's kind of the point. Oh, you know, you can't get the stuff.
Well, Playground of the Dead. We have At the Midnight Hour, Beware of What Lurks in the Shadows of the Playground of the Dead. And yes, out by Hellbound Books tomorrow. So tell us a little bit about it, Stone.
Well, it's very exciting, actually, and I'm really thrilled to be with Hellbound. I've worked with a number of publishers through the years, as you can imagine. I published over 20 books, novels and nonfiction, and I feel very excited having got to be in communication with James, who's a very approachable and just a great guy, I think, and I'm really excited to be working not just with Hellbound, but with him as well as the publisher. My book is kind of constructed as a mystery. Mysterious deaths are plaguing a peaceful coastal town, and among these are prominent citizens whose own children have died under curious and suspicious circumstances. These deaths are not viewed as murders. Some appear accidental or the result of natural causes. Yet to the police chief, a man named Braden Powell, who suffered his own tragic personal loss, suspicions grow. As the one person in clear vista with a deeper knowledge as to what might be concealing the truth, he questions the official findings. And as he digs deeper into discovering the truth, little does he realize the horror he is about to uncover. And it's a horror that ultimately will affect him personally as it threatens to overwhelm the community. And I don't want to go into too much more to find out exactly what that supernatural element is, but I think that gives you kind of an idea what the book is about.
Definitely. And what was your inspiration?
You know, it's funny. Ideas just sometimes come to me without my really thinking too much about it. But in this book, there were two things I kind of brought into it. Number one was I like the idea of the coastal town because there's a little city up here in Manitoba called Gimli. And it's not on a sea or an ocean, but it's on a big lake, Lake Winnipeg. And I always wanted to kind of write a story somewhat based around that. And then I was thinking about the book Jaws and the movie Jaws, and I thought, you know, there's a police chief, you know, involved with this, and instead of having a great white shark terrorizing the community, have something of a supernatural bent that's affecting the community.
Definitely. Definitely think that is scarier. James just made me watch Jaws a few years ago because I was like, I don't understand why it's scary. Just don't go in the water. So, you know, if you take these scary elements out of the water and it's supernatural, it's definitely scarier.
Well, that's just it because, I mean, if you're going to be afraid of a shark, you stay out of the water. But if something is actually affecting the community itself that you're not sure what it is, but it could be affecting you personally, then that does become quite terrifying.
It really does. Yeah, and then you have the element of, you know, the children as well. And I think that, you know, as a parent, that is one of your worst fears is something happening to your children. So,
you know, it's not just that, but you just made me remember something else about why I wanted to write the book is I used to listen to a show we got up here in Winnipeg. You might be familiar with it. It's called Coast to Coast. And they talk about supernatural things and ghosts and Bigfoots and Loch Monsters and stuff like that. And they did a show on ghost children. And I think, to me, I mean, I grew up on horror movies. I've seen, you know, virtually everything, I think, I read everything. So nothing much really scares me. But I thought, you know what, something about ghost children is actually pretty frightening. You know, they were playing these recordings that were apparently taken in cemeteries, and you could actually, EVPs, you could hear the voices of some of these children. And some of them were quite terrifying, actually. They didn't sound very happy, you know. And I thought, that scares me. So I figure if it scares me, it might be have the same effect on the reader.
Yes, I absolutely love that. We've had a bunch of the authors on our show that will ask that question. And I think we do. We write what scares us. I think that I think sometimes we write what scares us to kind of make it almost less scary for us. You know, the person who's writing it, it's kind of a way to you put it down on paper and it kind of, okay, I got that. I purged that, so I don't have to be quite as kind of like you face your fears or something. I definitely like that.
Not so much. Again, like I say, my reasoning to bring that into the book was because that it does scare me, and I feel if it scares me, I mean, of course, it's a very subjective thing, but I feel it would probably likely scare other people. And that's what I try to do when I write these books, which isn't always easy because I'm thinking, okay, what scares me? I mean, I was the son of a mortician. You know, as a child, I used to go to my dad's funeral home and, you know, look at bodies and stuff like that. Never bothered me at all. I grew up watching, you know, horror movies of all types, reading books, magazines, and all that stuff. And very little does really scare me, except for things like perhaps losing my children, losing my wife, something like that would be. But that's, again, a different kind of a fright. Or a different kind of a scare, I should say. So that's what I'm trying to do, I think, with my books now, is I want to write stuff that I think, if it affects me, might have the same effect on the reader.
Definitely. Definitely. I want to hear more of Playground of the Dead. Did you have an excerpt that you're going to read for us?
I'm not sure how much time I have, because I had a few excerpts here. One is about, I don't know, it's about 12 pages, but it's all double spaced. That might be too long, though. I could give you a smaller one that I think is pretty effective. It's only a few paragraphs, if that would work. Again, I'm thinking of the
great
time element.
Yeah.
Okay, let me give you this as an excerpt from part of the book here.
Okay.
A small corner of the northwestern quarter of the cemetery had its own grim significance. It was there that two open graves could be found next to one another, side by side, but situated several yards from the other burial plots, the result of a vague yet superstitious fear that the other children who shared the soil could be corrupted, as if a contagion permeated the very ground where the bodies were soon to rest. These two graves were to hold the victims of a brutal tragedy. It was autumn, the season of Halloween, and the celebration was just a week away, but there would be no trick-or-treating that year. No happy costumed children running door-to-door with their sacks and pails seeking candy. No little witches and princesses parading the streets. No goblins or ghouls haunting doorsteps. For that was the year a very real ghoul appeared at Clear Vista, a boogeyman whose stay in town was brief, but who left behind death and despair, a stranger who carried with him an unspeakable evil. The devil had come to Clear Vista, and life in the seaside community would never be the same.
Oh, you see, you just read enough that makes me want to read the book. So good job. Good job.
Well, thank you. I was, like I say, I had a longer one, but I thought, you know what? Just give a little teaser there. So I'm glad to hear you say that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I feel teased. I really do. I feel, obviously, I've actually read the book, so I... Although, this is the part of the show where Xtina sort of cajoles the guests into sending a signed copy. So do your bit, Xtina.
Yeah, Stone, when you make up the signed copy, that's X-T-I-N-A.
I do have your name listed down, so it's not a problem. Would be very happy to provide you with one. When I get my comps, I'd be happy to send you one signed if you would like.
I would love that. In that cover, I love the cover as well.
Love the cover too, and I was telling that to James. I mean, you never know what you're going to get. I've had some covers that I've liked. I've had some covers that I'm kind of, about. This cover really thrilled me. In fact, I went upstairs and said to my wife, you've got to see this. I was almost hyperventilating, and that's weird for me to be so excited. But she loved it too. Like, her eyes popped, and she just thought it was a fantastic cover. And then I looked at it more closely, and I said, holy mackerel, that artist, he made those little ghoul children on the cover look like something out of the old EC Tales from the Crypt magazine, which really made me enjoy it even more, because, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the old Tales from the Crypt magazine comics and, of course, the TV show and that. So that was an extra bonus, I thought.
Brilliant. Well, credit there to Kevin Enhart. He's been with Hellbound from almost the beginning. He was introduced to us by one of our David O'Ane Hughes, one of our first authors, and he's done a lot of work for us. And he absolutely knocked it out of the park. When I first saw it, I thought, wow, this is
definitely. And I hope, James, that you did pass on my appreciation to him, because
I did.
Thank you. Yeah, because like I say, I had a lot of book covers, and some have been quite nice in that, but without really sounding overboard, I think it's the best cover I've, especially for the horror novels, it's the best I've ever seen.
Brilliant. No, please. Awesome. I mean, Kev's one of our go-tos, and he always does a good job. And he does comics and that as well, so there's always that. But he's so versatile. But for me, I gave him the brief, and he just ran with it. And it's important to us as publishers that our authors, love their covers. I mean, just from my personal experience, the first book I had published, it was just like, this is your cover, and it was awful. It spoiled the whole experience for me. They made it 6x9, it was white paper, it was a god awful cover, and it was just awful. So that's why, we always involved the author. If you didn't like it, you could have said, we'd have redone it. But
He did a wonderful job. And again, as you know, James, of course, the title and the cover are the two things that are going to attract a reader's interest. And if you just you're Stephen King or something, you can just have a white cover with his name there and you're going to buy the book, I suppose. But, most writers are authors. You want to have a cover that's going to be striking and also kind of gives you a hint of what might be inside the book without really telling you as much as it could.
Yes, but it's a sales pitch. It's your advert for the book, and which is why we identify they're very, very important.
Yes, and the back cover as well, the write-up I thought was very well done. Again, it's telling you something, but not quite enough, and hopefully it's going to, you know, whet the potential reader's appetite to say, what's this all about? That cover looks interesting. The title looks interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know who the hell Stone Wallace is, but, well, you know, like the back of the cover, so there you go.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's the three elements that, you know, especially these days when a lot of people, they're making their buying decisions squinting at a cell phone, squinting like a, you know, a 2.5 by 5 inch screen. So it's really got to be high impact, you know, and that's the market we're into. You know, the days of people perusing the bookshelves down the bookstore are dwindling, unfortunately. But and I used to love that as a kid. I mean, the library, you know, all the bookstores, I could spend hours just looking, look at the pictures and look at the covers, and, you know, I think wishing I could read, I think, sometimes. But always good fun. Always good fun.
Well, yeah, like, true. When I began writing back and publishing about 1984, 85, you know, there was the bookstore, they had all a section, actually, that was put aside for horror novels and that, and there were lots of them, and, you know, you can see they're trying to compete with each other with covers and everything. And like you say, it's kind of dwindled now. You don't have the same type of visibility you had back then.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of it, like you say, you know, but when you're designing a cover as well, you have to bear that in mind. That when it's pared down onto a screen, onto a phone screen, it's like, you know, maybe it's a quarter of an inch by half an inch, and you've got to make an impact in that.
That's right. You're given limited space to do that. And again, you're competing.
Yeah.
Even today, like I say, it's not quite as heavy as it was back in the 80s with all the horror, especially the paperback originals that were coming out at that time, which mine were as well. I still did pretty well, mind you. I was kind of fortunate in that regard. But nowadays, like you say, it's a lot of competition. People aren't that quick to want to spend money, I don't think, on books like they used to be either, unless you've got that huge name behind you, whatever. So distribution's important. The look of the book's important. The content's most important, I think. And, there's a lot of elements now, I think, that really have to come into play to make a book successful.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. But it's a fun environment, you know. It's a labor of love, I think, a lot of the time. You know, we're certainly not in it for the money.
Not yet,
well,
anyway.
That's the thing. Otherwise, you want to become a tradesman or something. But I say there's a labor of love. And I think it's also like a, what did Stephen King once called it? A marketable obsession. And I like that because it's true. You know, it's something that you feel you have to do. I mean, I've done various jobs in my life, and I've never really felt satisfied at anything. Now, I've never gotten rich off my writing. You know, I've been okay with it at times. But it's something I just wanted to do and that I enjoyed. And fortunately, my wife is very supportive. She's a writer as well. She does children's books, ironically. So I always say to her, well, you put them to bed and I bring them out. You know, so
yes.
Different types of styles we do. But it's if you're artistic, if you've got that creative soul, it's something you feel like you are kind of compelled to do it.
Mm. You know, you guys could co-write together and do like a, do you remember, I think it was James Howe or Howie, when I was younger, did the Bunnicula, you know, series, the scary vampire bunny. And it was, you know, it was like children's books, and it was just a little, you know, kind of scary, but not really, but very humorous. And
I don't think that would ever work. She writes about teddy bears.
Aww. Well, see, she writes the teddy bear.
She's also a children's entertainer, and her other identity is the Starry Fairy, and she, you know, reads the children and stuff like hospitals and everything. So I don't think she'd ever really want to, you know, side with me in writing something that I would want to do, and probably be the same with her. I don't think I'd want to really tackle a children's book, so...
I feel that. I do. Yeah. So what are you working on now, Stone?
Well, I am very happy to say again, I'm associated with Hellbound, and I just signed a contract for 3 additional books. They'll be coming out, I believe James said, in 2024, one of which is, two of which are horror novels. One is called Wendigo, which is another idea that, again, would scare me personally, so I hope it has the same effect on the writer, or the reader, and I kind of look at that as Jaws of the North Country. It's that kind of story to it. And then I've got one about a little girl's nightmares that's called Child of Adam, and Adam is spelled with two M's. And then I'm tackling something a little different, since I know Hellbound also publishes noir. I've got a 1940s-style noir book called Waking in Hell with a Hangover. So I got those three books, working on another one right now, and I also have two stories coming out in the anthologies James was mentioning.
Well, so you're going to be pretty busy here. Awesome.
Well, it's the best way to be, like I say. And again, with writing horror novels and that, I've written westerns, I've written a lot of nonfiction, history, stuff like that. But the thing about horror, you just let your imagination go crazy. Have a good time with it.
Yes.
You know, you got to research. You have to make sure your characters are believable. It's very important that your characters are types that the reader can identify and sympathize with, you know, and hope that they're going to pull through on, or maybe not pull through, and depending on the situation. But it's fun because you get to just, okay, I'm going to go into this direction, and if it doesn't seem realistic, that's too bad, because that's, in my mind, it is real.
That's great. That's true, too. Well, I hate to do this because this has been so much fun, but we're just about out of time with our first segment. But before I let you go, you got to tell us real quick where we can find you online.
Well, I'm on Facebook, although I don't do too much with that, actually. But I also have a website that I have to update, and that's it's on also the Hellbound page. My website is www.stonewallace.net. And I have a selection of the books I've written and a little biography and other things that I've done. I do a lot of freelance work for different magazines and that. So it's all on there if anybody's interested in taking a look. And I'll be adding some new titles, courtesy of Hellbound, in the next little while. I've got to get my computer gal to update my site there.
Awesome. And for all of our listeners out there, go out and buy Playground of the Dead by Stone Wallace out tomorrow. Thank you so much.
On Friday the 13th.
What a great day for launching a horror book.
It's got to be good luck. Friday the 13th has always been kind of a lucky day for me. So, I feel it's pretty advantageous.
We can't wait to have you back.
We will speak to you. Yeah, we will speak to you again very, very soon, hopefully.
I look forward to it, and again, I look forward to seeing the other books coming out. And again, I'm very proud and pleased to be with your company, James, and working with you. And you two are terrific. I've made two new friends, and I'm very happy about that. And thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
No, thank you for joining us. An absolute pleasure. Okay, have a great rest of your evening.
You too, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, that went by far too quickly. It always does.
It did.
It always does. But, it's time for to crack open another box of Chardonnay and for me to go and empty the old bladder, and we'll be right back.
Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media, Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
found my thrill. On Blueberry Hill. On Blueberry Hill. When I found you, the moon stood still. But all of those vows you made were never to be. So we're apart. You caught on me still. Oh, you were my thrill. Love, sweet melody. But all of those vows you made were only to be. So we're apart. You thought of me still.
Welcome back to part two of The New Panic Room, brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, we're back. I it was one of my favorite songs. I have not heard that for ages.
I haven't either.
Big Fats Domino. For me, people talk about classical music. For me, it's not Beethoven and Mozart and Chopin. It's Fats Domino, Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis. Sadly, all gone now, which is a bit tragic. The Big Bopper and Buddy Holly, and that's proper music. Young people listen to today. You can't hear the words.
It's awful.
My daughter had one under the car today, and it was like, I'm assuming it was called Motherfucker, because that was pretty much the only lyric that I could pick out, and it was just a stream of, it sounded like me when I'm driving, to be honest. It's like somebody recorded Jimbo driving, and all the bad language and stream of profanity, especially when people throw sandwiches at me. And they put it to music, so maybe they should. Well, there you go. There's a hip hop. Put it to hip hop beat, and it'd be a number one.
Yeah,
it really
you
would.
You used to play that song by Lily Allen, "Fuck You," and
I love that song.
The first time you played it, I wasn't listening to the words at all, and I'm like, "Oh, this is such a sweet song. It sounded just so sweet." And I think the next time I heard it, I'm like, is she really saying what I think she's saying?
Yeah.
And then I listened to it.
Yeah, great. Because
it's awesome.
It's like a jolly bubblegum pop song. And then you listen to it and it's very.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's very well done, So, that's a good one as well.
Now.
I love that one. We need to. I'll see if I can dig that out and we'll play that again sometime. But no lovely Samantha, because she's got COVID, which, to be fair, is so 2 years ago. So, get with the program, Samantha.
I know. Yeah.
I don't like to brag, but I had COVID before it was popular,
Sure did, yeah.
But so she's not joined. She's all COVIDed up and shit. So get well, Samantha. Hopefully
yes,
you'll be un-COVIDed for next week. So
We love you.
So I'm leaving now because I don't know what happens next, to be honest with you. What's going help? What's going on?
We have our second guest of the evening, and you know what? If we want to just talk for a second, because Samantha, we could do our own like review if we have any book reviews or any TV reviews or something. You know, we can do that.
Well, if you want, I've late to the party. I've been watching The Strain, which is a Guillermo del Toro production. I mean, it's been out a long time. I watched the first couple years ago and couldn't get into it, and it's popped up on Hulu, so I'll give it another go. And I've just got to the end of the end of the first season, the three seasons in total, and I'm really enjoying it. It's a good old vampire romp, and it's pretty cool, and... Yeah, I recommend it. It's a good old, it's got all the dynamics in there and all the characters, and it's pretty well done. And there you go. That's my Jim's review. Not as good as Samantha's reviews, but I've watched that. I'm also watching in parallel, and I've been waiting for it to come out for a while. It's a documentary it's actually a dramatization. Of the life and times of Jimmy Savile, the famous or infamous DJ in England, who shortly after he died, it all came out of the woodwork. He was a serial sex abuser for decades.
Oh, wow.
And this is a guy who rubbed shoulders with royalty, with prime ministers, with the Pope, they said he was hiding in plain sight. He built his profile up to the back, to the point where he was untouchable. People knew about it. He was a bigwig in the BBC, had all TV shows, and he raised millions and millions of pounds for charity. And he was people would just cover it up, or say, well, nobody will believe you, it's Jimmy, or and he got away with it he only came out of the woodwork. People only dare speak out after he was dead. It's a four-parter. I'm halfway through part three, and it is because a lot of it I grew up watching this guy on TV. He used to do the pop music shows and variety shows and all these. He was everywhere. He was actually like an unofficial counselor to Charles and Diana. Now, they were having marital problems because he was very close friends with them. Absolutely. So again, if you get a chance to see it, then if that's your bag, but again, it resonates with me because there's a lot of my childhood there. It's funny how many of my childhood heroes turned out to be serial sex offenders, which I don't know if that's
scary.
That says something about the times in which I grew up, or it says something about me. I'm not really too sure about that, but moving on.
Let's see.
Moving on.
Yeah. Xtina's recommendation. We're talking about Hulu, and I told you about a show that I love, and I've seen it a few times all the way through. The Americans. It's a really good show, and I just really – it's like one of my comfort shows, And it's on Hulu now, so if you get a chance, you can
watch it. You know,
I really
think
good.
I will. The number of people that have told me, you've got to watch this.
It's –
if it's
really
on Hulu, when I finish The Strain, I will look up The Americans, definitely. Remind me.
I will. It's a great show. So, we've watched it all the way through twice now, and it's like every time it gets done, I just feel like, what am I going to do with my life now?
I'm done.
Yeah.
Well, that's the mark of a good show is when you are... sad. It's like a good book, when you get to the end and you're sad. It's almost like being in mourning, because you miss the characters, you miss that, and I'm terrible at pacing myself. If I'm into something, I'll just binge. I can't just think, I don't want to, and I do it every time, and then I get to the end and I'm sad now. I've watched it all in a week. All three seasons in a week, and I'm sad now because now what do I do? And I just feel lost, like a little lost lamb.
Is, I think The Americans is 7 seasons, and it's one of the shows that I think is like, there's a lot of shows in one season, so it'll take a little while to get through it, and it's definitely something to do them. But yeah,
I will.
Yeah. So there. We had to make up for Samantha not being here. So,
there you go. That's how we. That was James and Eckstein's review corner. I think we did Samantha proud.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope she's listening. And yeah, so yes, we should get on with our second guest of the night. We've had her on before, and she knows what she's getting into, but yet she still comes back. So, former adult entertainer and horror author Erin Lewis. Woo!
Hello.
Hi guys. Thanks for having me back.
Hi. No, thank you for joining. I've got to ask, actually, since it's a bit of a theme of the evening, have you ever had somebody throw a sandwich at you in traffic?
Have I ever had somebody throw a sandwich at me?
In traffic.
Usually.
In traffic.
In traffic, no. Mm. No, I'm pretty sure I've had somebody spit at me, but I think that's probably about it.
I don't know if you were listening earlier on that we were in a traffic thing and some woman threw a sandwich at me through a car window.
maybe it wasn't you though. Maybe her sandwich was just not great, you know?
No, honestly, it was at me because I shouted at her because she was in my way. And she was looked at me like it was my fault. And she literally threw her sandwich at me through the window. It's like my daughter was with me. We were just absolutely creased up. And I just said, that poor woman, you know, I wonder how far she got down the road before she regretted deeply what she'd done. Because suddenly she felt hungry and, I wish I hadn't thrown that now. But serves her right. Serves her right. That's what you get. But in all my years of driving, and it's been a lot of years now, that is the first time that anybody's ever thrown food at me.
Yeah. But I'm going to strive for that now. I am. We do the drives and stuff with our car club, and there are times we get people, you know, that'll throw their, you know, middle finger at us. And we had a guy in a tractor, actually, and he had double middle fingers. I mean, it was serious. He had both of them going.
Oh, nice. Excellent. There you go. Yeah. There's an accolade for you.
Yeah. We just wave, like, you know, yay. You know, we wave at him. He's just angry. So, yeah. But no food.
Fair, I mean, you're in a Porsche, which doesn't bring out the best in other road users, I've noticed.
Yeah. I wasn't going to bring up what I was driving and just the fact it was a car. Because now...
it's bad enough for me. I mean, I drive a Mustang, and you get every boy. You see all the little boy racers in their souped up, you know, they're in a souped up Corolla. You know, they put a spoiler on the back and a go faster stripe on the hood, and they think they're, you know, Stirling Moss. You know, and they think I'm going to take on this Mustang, and because they haven't got a chance, to be honest. But they do. I mean, it's just how small does your penis have to be to have to prove yourself by taking on just an old man in a Mustang? I mean, for goodness sake, you know, get a life.
Yeah,
really.
It is funny. We'll, you know, be going somewhere and the husband will be like, oh, I think that person next to us is trying to race us. How cute is that? You know, like, we didn't even know.
he didn't notice them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Erin, you were here tonight to talk to us about your book, Colleen. I'm looking at the tagline here. We have a bisexual succubus and conspiracy theories and then killing people and I'm like, wow, this I have to read this book. So tell us a little bit.
I think the tagline is worth the price of the book itself. It is one of the best taglines I've ever read. It is brilliant.
Thank you.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I guess, man, it sort of evolved over time. I recently learned a couple of terms that I hadn't really been familiar with before, because I had started writing nonfiction, which was like really structured. So like I really had a, you know, I had like a mapped out path, and I kind of knew how everything was going to go. And as I started to kind of transition to fiction and really tap into like my love of horror and like dark humor and the macabre, I learned that I guess I'm what's called a pantser. So I sort of started out with
are you still there?
Or really
you can
interact.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a an evil demonic spirit trying to take over your phone. It really didn't want you to tell us about your book, I think.
Sorry. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you.
There
now.
You
I
are,
think
yeah.
my dogs are fighting in the background as well, so it's all happening. No, you are back with us, Erin. Yeah, carry on.
Okay. So anyway, I had kind of had a sort of like slight idea in my head, and then as I started writing, Colleen, who started out as a ghost, sort of evolved and morphed into, a sex demon. But she's like a nice person. She's a helper, and she wants to help her friend and doesn't quite realize what her origins are, goes online to figure that out, discovers some interesting conspiracy theories in the meantime, and also figures out that she is killing people. But she's determined to get what she needs to survive as a succubus without actually doing that. But she's unsuccessful for a while. And then, of course, as the bodies pile up around her friend, detectives start sniffing around and, you know, things get a little tricky.
I love it. I do. I do like the fact that it's horror, but at the same time, it's kind of comedy as well. Or, you know, I mean, I can kind of, you know, yeah, I do like the bisexual succubus thing and conspiracy theories and man, like James said, just on the tagline alone, I want to read it. But the cover as well, I want to say I love the cover. So, I think that I want to hear more. I think you had an excerpt that you're going to read for us.
I do.
Yay.
And here goes. So, I'm not a ghost, but before you call me a liar, roll with me a moment. I am from a supernatural realm, not of this earth, at least I think I am. Although if humans ever prove it to be real, it will just be a natural realm and not super at all. I don't remember anything before I came to be with Lacey, although I don't think I was ever human. I am, from what I can tell, what some refer to as a succubus, a sex demon, if you will. Much harder to explain to a human than a ghost. Lacey may not have taken to me as she had if I had told her that. So I fudged just a little. Not quite a ghost and not quite a liar. I didn't need the Ouija board to come through. I was doing that before. In fact, I'm pretty sure Ouija boards are complete bullshit. Absolutely zero danger of summoning anything other than a self-induced case of the heebie-jeebies. If a demon or ghost wants to find you, they'll do it all on their own, I think. But it made a convenient excuse to finally introduce myself. When I first came to Lacey in her school library, I hadn't intended on contacting her, at least not then. She was a child. I'm a demon, not an asshole. Well, sometimes I'm an asshole, but that really all depends on your definition of asshole, but I digress. Lacey kind of breezes over the whole bully thing. She makes it out like it was no big deal, but those damn kids were ruthless, awful little turds they were. When I found Lacey, she was lonely and scared most of the time. I was with her the whole time, watching, maybe influencing her just a little. I can be just a little manipulative, I suppose, but I am a demon after all. And my heart, if I have one, is always in the right place. Well, mostly. But I was watching out for her. When her main nemesis, Vivian, the tall blonde and very popular girl, came down with a wicked case of the herpes, that was me. Or at least I think it was. before you get all judgy again, let me tell you, she deserved it. She got up every morning to make Lacey's life as miserable as she could. With her flawless skin and legions of middle school minions, she needed to be knocked off her pedestal. And properly humbled, she finally left my poor Lacey alone. Think about it. I saved that bully's life. She learned an ugly lesson about being ugly and eventually stopped her snotty ways. At least she did until she was hit by that bus. Not me, I swear. Well, it could have been just a little me. I didn't intend to fall in love with Lacey, and as a succubus, I'm really not supposed to. But from what I can tell, it happens from time to time. And is that really so bad? Love is good, right? She's not lonely anymore, and we have a blast together. About the demon thing, but she doesn't really need to know that right now. Not to mention, I'm not entirely sure that's what I am anyway. She is so curious about the afterlife, and I'm not sure what to tell her. The truth is, I swear it's the truth, is that I don't know much about it myself. Sure, I might be a demon from another realm, but I'm in the dark about my existence as much as humans are. I think there could be a god and a devil, but I've never met either. Although, from what I've learned on Earth, God doesn't seem like... And yeah, I can confidently say that Mary is in a better place. I couldn't tell you if that is heaven or not. I have no clue if heaven exists. But I can tell you that house was a real dump. I didn't mean to kill her either. It kind of happened by accident. A few times while Lacey was sleeping, I crept into the old lady's house. Really, I was just curious. And happened to find the shoebox full of cash in her closet. But next to it, I also found some old Nazi paraphernalia. Nice, well-meaning old people don't take that kind of stuff. And is stealing from a Nazi really that bad? My conscience is clear. But I really didn't mean to kill her. I just wanted to scare her a little. Give her a nightmare, make sure she stayed asleep. That's it. But I'm a very specific kind of demon, a sex demon. So what was meant to be just a bad night of sleep turned into a kind of fatal wet dream. My bad for sure, but still not intentional. And at least she went out with a bang. Orgasms were probably well in her past at that point. So really, I did her a favor. See, I'm a good demon. Burning down the cash she had found, it was necessary. Her family might notice it was missing, and I'm not here to get Lacey in trouble. At least not serious trouble. So we burnt it down. But in the end, it all worked out for the best. Her family doesn't have to deal with all her stuff. They get an insurance check for the house, and Lacey got some cash to tide her over. Cash she is now using to start her new job. I'm a good helper. So that was
Colleen. I love Colleen. Yeah, I would hang out with her. I might.
She sounds like a great gal. Yeah, she sounds like a great gal.
She tries.
Yeah,
she tries though, and that's the funny part. No, I've always really.
I think you faded out a little bit there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know why that keeps happening. I can hear you guys fine. I've always really liked horror, but I guess one of my own like coping mechanisms just through hard times in life has always been like humor, and I've always really enjoyed. And then that like quick comic relief.
Yes.
To kind of break it up.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think that especially if you're dealing with any kind of dark or, scary things, that we do need that kind of break every so often to kind of catch your breath and realize things aren't quite as bad as you may think they are or something. But I definitely like the humor. And more as I get older, I think when I was younger, I could, read some really just horrific, dark things. I didn't need it as much, but I'm a little older now, and I want to give me some chuckles, give me some, let me smile a little bit before you, tear my heart back out and, scare me to death. But,
we've covered this before, humor in horror, all the best horror has that grain of dark humor in it, and I think it helps to enhance the horrific, and it adds that little bit of light relief. And as I always say, there's humor, no matter how dark, in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I can't remember what it's called now. I once saw a movie. It was just awful. And it was like they just sucked all the humor out of it. There wasn't any. Yeah. It was just relentless. 2 hours of relentless, depressing drudge.
Yeah, that's awful.
You know, and it's just, no, which is why I love the dark humor in Colleen. It's brilliant. And the steamy bit as well. It's nice and steamy, which is, we do like a bit of steam on this show.
Yeah, I was going to say, just listening to that little snippet that you read, Colleen seems, I could see her being I was going to say a trilogy, but even a series. I could see her being starring in more than just in one book. Do you have anything else planned for her?
You know, I wasn't actually expecting it to come out as fast as it did. So it was sort of like a whirlwind. And I have been kicking around. I guess, inadvertently fell in love with her too, because she has kind of like an innocent ignorance about her existence and about life. And so she approaches life and situations in with that like innocent curiosity, which is kind of how the conspiracies come into play, because she wants to learn and she's hungry to learn. So I can definitely see her having a future. I'm not sure exactly what that looks like, but I'm definitely letting Colleen bounce around in my head a little bit, see what comes out.
I also enjoy that you said that when it comes to the writing horror, that you were a panster, because I have, that would be me as well. I cannot plan anything, so I kind of, I think that I want to, like, I would love to be able to sit down and, you know, map out exactly what's going to happen. But I think that, you know, chapter two in, and then characters sometimes do what they want to do. And so I think that I kind of wonder how some of the authors who are very much into the a timeline or, how do they do it? Like, how do they go by a plan? Because characters just, you know, they do what they want.
Well, I have to, you know, I have to plan. I wrote one of my books was without a plan, which was Colton Forshay. I kind of literally pantsed it from start to finish. But everything else, especially with my ghostwrite for the other authors, other people as well, I have to have a plan. Mm-hmm. Because when you write your plan to start off, you write it knowing that things are going to change. It's a dynamic sort of thing, but it gives you that structure. Mm-hmm. So if you do wander off, you've got something to come back to. Otherwise, I would just be off and I would write a 600-page novel that just went off.
Wandered
away. Yeah. And, you know, so at least if I do wander off with the backstory or think, oh, yeah, that's so, you know, say the character decides to do something, that's fine. But I can always bring it back to that structure, so, you know, that the story is still told. But that's just me. You know, I know plenty of authors who start with page one and off they go. You know, it just develops as they go along.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think that I could use more structure. Can I pay someone to structure and then I can just fill in all the good parts? That'd be fun.
Yeah, if you can afford me, Xtina, we can talk.
Right. Oh, gosh. Yeah, that'd be fun. So, Aaron, what are you working on now?
It wouldn't be fun for either of us.
Yeah, yeah, that's why I glossed over that really fast.
Mm-hmm. I know.
We drive each other crazy, but so what are you working on now, Aaron?
Well, right now I'm actually kind of going back through some of the other stuff that I have a couple of novellas that I'm kind of looking at and maybe reworking and some other ideas. And I just, I had a lot of things sort of like pile up. I have a unique book signing that's happening over the weekend, which can take a little bit of planning and other stuff. And so I kind of took a little bit of a hiatus after, like, just a mental break after Colleen came out last month. And so I'm kind of reworking some other stuff right now while something else kind of comes to the surface. I start working on another book, but I just haven't quite, mapped that out. I'm sort of waiting for another, you know, monster to surface from the recesses of my brain. And once it comes out, it sort of just, it happens really fast. So I just figured I'm going to let it happen and give myself a break. But for right now, I'm looking at a couple of other novellas that I had finished, seeing if maybe they can find a home or if I want to revisit them. But I don't have anything. I currently write the second, first time in like 3 years. I do not have a current work in progress.
Huh. I have to say that a poster that for your book signings, with the Hellbound stuff, and then you're in there, and I'm like, that is super hot. I think I want to get one for my bedroom wall. Can I get one?
Well, I'm not even sure who. I mean, you guys did that for me, which is going to be really, really, really awesome. I'm incredibly grateful to have that, actually. So I was really super excited to get that in the mail.
Yeah.
But yeah,
well, I hope it does the job. Yeah.
You know what? It should. It should definitely be pretty cool. So I'm really, really, really excited. In fact, it's already in my trunk and ready to go. So,
excellent. But, remember, you need to take a couple of pictures of it in situ for us.
I
have to see if I can actually do that.
Okay, understand.
Let me think about that. I might have to do that before or after close, because we're not not generally allowed to have pictures cameras in that.
Okay.
That's how you get your phone smashed in the parking lot. So, but like I said, it is a very unique situation. But yeah, let me see if I can do that, and I will definitely hook that up. I just got to check and see. But
smashed
this weekend. Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, they take and erase the pictures. It's not. It's usually not cool. But
yeah.
I will. Let me see if I can hook that up. I'm going to be there before open. So, once I get through this, I think there's something. I'll be ready to start something new. I just haven't quite got it yet, but it'll come.
Yeah, it's definitely and all different things. It's so weird how the writer's brain works. You know, there's a house that I see when we ride back from North Carolina, and I try to take a picture of it every time we come back. And I'm like, there is a story in there, and it's like I'm waiting to figure out what it is. But it'll come.
Yeah, there were, like, Colleen, actually, the true inspiration for it and is actually a friend of mine, and definitely my fictional Colleen shares some traits with her. That's where that, like, idea kind of budded. And, like, with South of Heaven, I had seen something about Jeffrey Dahmer being in heaven, and that really, like, kicked off that. But it took a minute to, like, marinate, and the story sort of evolved in my head, and it took a while. And once it's there, so I guess that's part of my plotting and my planning, is that when that happens, it sort of evolves, but it takes a minute for me to start to get ready to actually write it down. I have to let it kind of bounce around in my head a little bit. Something will happen. That little seed hasn't quite come to light yet, but when it does, it'll come out real fast, and, you know, we'll see where
definitely.
It goes. So.
Definitely. We are just about out of time for our show this evening. Before we let you go, you have to let us know where we can find you online.
I get around. So I'm on Threads, Instagram's, you know, Twitter, and Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You can also find me at erinlewis.com, Amazon, obviously. And all my handles are erinlewis666. So I should be pretty easy to find.
Awesome. And for all of our listeners out there, go out and buy Colleen by Erin Lewis. And, yeah, I can't wait to have you back, Erin. And good luck on your book thing. And definitely if you can get pictures. If you can't, that's fine, too. But we want all the dirt. So thank you very much. And we can't wait to have you back.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Have a great rest of your evening. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Oh, yeah. Again, time has flown.
Every week.
Yeah. We say every week, you know, and it does. It just whizzes by, you know. It's right. Literally, you know, before the show starts, oh god, no, how am I going to make 90 minutes? Oh my god! And here we are,
right?
You know, it is. It's time. Unfortunately, it is time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Ooh, goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight.